night. The next morning, they ate the last of their food and water before orientating themselves with the knife once again. Although Lusam was a little worried that their supplies had now run out, they felt sure the men following them hadn't had time to collect any kind of food or water whatsoever, and if they became hungry and thirsty, it was a fair bet the Empire agents would be feeling a whole lot worse. Onwards they went for another full day, every hour checking their course and correcting it if necessary, and once again they refrained from using magic for that last 2 hours before full dark. They all woke the next morning hungry and thirsty, but no one spoke of it. By mid-afternoon, they were fortunate enough to come across a large rock formation with a trickle of water running down the face of it. Lusam collected some of it in a small force field, boiled it, then cooled it quickly before carefully releasing it into two water skins. They really didn't want to tip off their enemies to the water source, but drinking contaminated water wouldn't do any of them any good either. So they swiftly moved on and rechecked their direction 10 minutes later. Hopefully, if the Empire agents had detected his magic, they would now bypass the water source completely, but he would never know for sure. For another 3 days, they travelled through the valley, every hour taking a reading and every night taking turns to watch for trouble. On the fourth day, they were all starting to get very hungry and the water skins were almost empty again, but the sky seemed to start getting a little brighter. At first, nobody mentioned it, but after another couple of hours, there was no denying the fact it was getting brighter the further they travelled. It was about midday when they finally emerged from the mist into a gloriously sunny day. They came almost immediately to a narrow stream and quenched their thirst in the crystal-clear running water. Lusam spotted several small fish under the surface and quickly extracted them from the water, cooking them inside his force field and handing them out before anyone could even ask what he was doing. Ren and Neela took it in their stride, but Alexia just stood there slack-jawed, holding her fish and looking at Lusam. "If you don't want it, I'll eat it," Lusam said, teasing her. "No way," Alexia said, tucking into the freshly cooked fish. Further ahead, they could see a small wood, beyond which they could just about see a mountain range in the distance. "We need to get to those trees for cover, just in case they're still on our tail," Lusam said, pointing over the stream at the woods. The stream wasn't deep or that wide, so they simply waded through it to the other side, then ran towards the cover of the trees. When they reached the trees, Lusam looked back to see if anyone else had emerged from within the mist, but he couldn't see anyone. They all continued in the direction they had been traveling, when Ren said, "Wait, something is wrong."
"What do you mean?"
asked Lusam, confused. "Look at the moss on the trees here. We know Helveel should be northeast of here, but we're currently traveling west. Wherever your knife is pointing, it's not Helveel," Ren said.
"That can't be right. Maybe we got turned around a bit back there. Let me recheck our direction again," Lusam said, removing the knife and casting the spell on it once more.
The knife pointed directly at the mountain range in front of them, indicating a westerly direction.
"That has to be wrong, unless..."
Lusam started to say, but was cut short by Ren.
"There's another Guardian book," Ren exclaimed. "Lusam, do you remember Aisha's parting words to you, lad?"
"I think so," Lusam replied, trying to remember her exact words.
"Let me refresh your memory, lad. She said, not all journeys will follow a straight path. Sometimes you must stray a long way from an intended path to arrive at your true destination. Your true destination is not always your intended one. Until now, I have been trying to understand what she meant by those words. But I think you'll agree, it just became perfectly clear,"
Ren said, falling to his knees in prayer. Zed had noticed the sky brighten as he continually honed in on the boy's blatant use of magic. The last time he felt the magic, he knew it was much closer, so he called out to his fellow agents to converge on his position. Soon, the boy would be dead, and he would return home a hero.
This is the end of books 1 and 2, but the story continues with Lusam the Dragon Mage Wars book 3. Keep listening after the credits for a free preview. You have been listening to Lusam the Dragon Mage Wars books 1 and 2. Produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers James Torn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2015 by Dean Cadman. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. Chapter 1. For the past 12 days, Lu Sam and his party had been relentlessly pursued by the enemy agents they had first encountered outside Stelgad. Not long after Lu Sam had managed to guide them safely out of the fog-covered valley, and they had accidentally discovered the possible existence of another guardian book hidden somewhere in the mountains ahead of them, the agents of Aemon also emerged from the fog behind them. Fortunately, Neela and Alexia had spotted the enemy agents almost immediately as they had emerged, giving them a crucial head start through the sparse trees on the west side of the valley. They had also been exceptionally lucky that first day, when they had managed to trick their pursuers into following a fake trail laid by Alexia. It had gained them a few precious hours' distance between themselves and the agents. Up until that point, they had been forced to travel in single file with Lu Sam at the rear, using his magical shield to protect the others as best he could. The flat valley floor had been strewn with huge boulders, some the size of a small house. In one way, it made it easier to gain some cover from the multitude of magical missiles constantly being fired at them, but it also made it very difficult for Lu Sam to maintain his shield around everyone as they dodged in and out of the boulders. Both Ren and Neela had sustained minor injuries during that first day, but fortunately neither injury was serious enough to slow them down much. The valley floor they had traveled through was flanked on both sides with an almost vertical rock face, making it impossible to climb, not that they could have even tried while being pursued as they were. When they reached the far end of the valley, they were faced with a stark choice. Directly in front of them, the ground had ended suddenly, plunging several thousand feet down a sheer precipice to a valley floor below. They found two paths, one leading west up the mountain where they needed to go, and another path that ran east, possibly to the valley floor below, but they couldn't be sure because it was hidden by trees a little further along. The path leading up the mountain was completely exposed, with no cover whatsoever. If they had gone that way, they would not have survived long once the agents had a clear view of them. They quickly decided the only possible option was to follow the path to the east and try to lose their pursuers first, then try to find another way back up the mountain later. They'd followed the easterly path for only a short distance, when Neela had noticed a small cave in the rock face below. They quickly came up with a plan for Alexia to create a fake trail, while Lu Sam levitated the rest of them down the sheer rock face and into the cave below. Neela had been petrified at the thought of stepping off that precipice, but Lu Sam had convinced her it was the only way, and so she had reluctantly agreed. Alexia had somehow managed to cause a small rock slide, which sent dozens of boulders crashing down the steep path and through the trees below. Later, when Lu Sam had asked her why, she had told him that it would have made it almost impossible for the agents to tell if they had indeed traveled that way or not with all the broken foliage the rocks would have caused. When Alexia signaled her return to Lu Sam, he quickly levitated her down the rock face and into the cave before she could be seen by the pursuing agents. Fortunately, the cave had been deep enough to hide their presence from the agents, and they had passed them by without discovering their hiding place. It had been difficult to decide how long to stay within the cave. If they tried to leave too soon and were spotted, their lead would not be significant enough to safely allow them to climb the western path. But if they stayed too long and the agents discovered their ruse too early, they might lose any advantage they already had. Or worse, they might even be discovered within the cave with no way to escape. They agreed amongst themselves that the agents would likely need at least 2 hours to discover their deception. They waited within the cave for an hour, then levitated back up the rock face to put as much distance between themselves and the agents as possible. They had managed to climb the exposed western path before being discovered once again by the agents. Thankfully, the agents were now over half a day behind them on the winding path up the mountain, and because the path switched back and forth so much as it climbed higher, it also gave the agents far less opportunity to fire randomly at them from below. That was 9 days ago, and since then, neither side had gained much ground on the other. The light was fading fast as they continued to climb the mountain path. A path leading to where, none of them knew, but it was the only option now available to them. They had been running on and off for almost 2 weeks now, and they were all on the verge of exhaustion.
However, if it hadn't been for the keen eyes of Alexia, who had managed to kill 3 rabbits with her bow, things would have been a lot worse for them by now. Along with the rabbits, they had also managed to collect a fair number of berries as they climbed the ever-steepening mountain path. For the first 2 nights while climbing the mountain, Lusan's party were forced to travel all through the night. The agents following them had refused to stop for the night, and that had forced Lusan's party to also keep moving. As the lack of food and rest took its toll on both parties, there seemed to be a mutual acceptance to stop for the hours of darkness. Only once did the agents try to gain ground on them during the night, but they were easily spotted by their bright auras moving in the darkness below, and all it achieved was yet another night of no rest for both parties. It soon became apparent that Lusam's party had one big disadvantage over their pursuers. Only Lusan and Ren were able to see the agents' auras, which meant one of them had to always be acting as lookout during the night, just in case the agents tried to gain ground on them once more. This meant that both Lusan and Ren were becoming more and more exhausted with each day that passed. Over the past several days, it had become almost like a game between the two parties. Lusan's party would find a spot to camp before full darkness, making sure the agents could see them clearly, and when the agents were happy they had stopped, they also made camp. Only on 2 occasions were Lusan's party fired upon after they set up camp, both missiles harmlessly impacting on Ren's blessed shield as he acted as lookout. After that night, no other attacks came. Neither party wishing to waste energy they simply didn't have. Tonight, it was Ren's turn to take first watch, and he took up his position while the others tried to make themselves as comfortable as possible. Neela had picked up a small branch and was busy whittling it with one of her knives when Alexia broke the silence.
"You never did tell me about those enchanted knives of yours. What exactly do they do anyway?"
she asked, nodding towards the knife in Neela's hand.
"Oh, Lusan made them stronger, so they would always stay sharp and never corrode,"
Neela replied, turning the knife over in her hand, as if only just now noticing she was holding it.
"Okay, that's certainly very useful. Does the enchantment make them fly any further?"
Alexia asked. Neela was about to answer her, but was interrupted before she was able to.
"No, it doesn't make them fly any further.
I never thought about that when I enchanted them, to be honest, or I probably would have tried to add that too," Lusan replied, almost collapsing next to the 2 girls through his exhaustion.
"Really? You could do that?"
Alexia asked.
"I think so.
Why'd you ask?" Lusan replied.
"Maybe if we make it out of here alive, you can enchant my bow to make it shoot further,"
Alexia asked hopefully. Lusan nodded absent-mindedly at her request, then realized that given the small amount of food they had left, maybe enchanting Alexia's bow wouldn't be a bad idea at all. It would take very little effort to enchant the bow, and if they did happen to see any more game animals on their way up the mountain, it would give them a much better chance of gaining some more food.
"Give me your bow," Lusan said, sitting back up and holding out his hand. "No, I didn't mean for you to do it now. You need to save your strength. You're not getting enough rest as it is, always having to stay awake half of the night on lookout duty. I wish I could see them and take my turn. I feel so useless not being able to help out,"
Alexia said.
"Yeah, me too. I'm sick of all this running. We're all exhausted, not to mention almost starving. I wish we could just fight them,"
Neela said, looking back down the mountainside towards where she guessed the agents were now camped.
"There are too many of them to fight right now. Our only chance is to find that book. Maybe I can learn something new that might help us defeat them, or at least slow them down a little. But in the meantime, let me enchant your bow. It would be a real shame to miss the opportunity of some easy food just because it was out of normal bow range, don't you agree?"
Lusan said, smiling.
"I do, but surely you could use your magic to kill any animals we come across,"
Alexia replied. Lusan laughed, but it was a humorless laugh.
"Normally I would agree with you, but as you've seen, each time I use my magic, they attack us. They can't see my aura, but they can see me when I use my magic. I'm not sure I could protect us all with my magic shield against another sustained attack. There are at least 12 of them down there, maybe more, and each time they attack, I have to use at least 12 times more energy than each of them do. I've been wondering why they haven't pushed us more over the last few days. And I think I may have worked out why," Lusan said wearily.
"What do you mean? They've been matching our pace ever since we started climbing this mountain path,"
Neela said, looking confused.
"Yes, they've been matching our pace, but for the last few days that's all they've done.
At first I thought they knew something we didn't about what lies ahead of us, maybe a dead end or something worse. But I think I finally worked out what they're doing. They're simply trying to exhaust us, or more precisely, me,
Lusan said.
But I thought we agreed that they were even less prepared for this journey than we were. They must be in just as bad shape as us, if not worse,
Neela said, again looking down into the darkness towards where the enemy would be.
Maybe at the start of this journey we did have a slight advantage, but no longer. I've been watching them closely today using my mage sight, and what I saw will certainly swing the advantage back in their favor very quickly. As you all know, during the day while we're traveling, I have to position myself within our group so that my shield will protect our vulnerable spots. At first, the lack of missiles coming from them was a welcome relief, but keeping my shield active all day while traveling is extremely tiring in itself. Although I began to notice a while ago that when I use my magic more often and push myself, I seem to be able to do even more later without feeling as tired. A bit like when you overuse your muscles. It hurts while you're doing it, but later you're stronger for it. The problem is, I don't have enough time overnight to fully recover my energy reserves, so each day I grow weaker and weaker. Today, I noticed that none of the agents were using a magical shield anymore. They're rebuilding their magical reserves, albeit slowly without food, but the result will still be the same. At some point, there will be at least 12 Magi who have full power reserves, and myself with a very depleted one. I'm sure they intend an all-out assault on us within the next day or two, and I'm also sure it's going to be a very one-sided battle when they do, Lusam said in a very somber voice. Well, then we'd better convince them to start using their shields again, lad,
Ren said, obviously paying attention to their conversation whilst keeping a lookout for any activity below.
I thought about sending a fireball or two at them today, but I decided against it. I figured it was just a pointless waste of energy. Whatever I sent their way, they would see in plenty of time to erect their shields and block it. It would only weaken me, not to mention they would surely fire back at me, sapping my strength even further.
I see your point, lad. I guess if you tried to drop your shield during the day, they would more than likely send another missile at you, forcing you to use it or killing you if you didn't, Ren said.
Then we need another way to persuade them that not using their shields is a bad idea. Alexia, could you hit them from this range with an arrow?
Neela asked.
No, I'm afraid not. I've been watching them closely, and they've never come within my bow range. That was one of the reasons why I asked if your knives would fly further. But then I remembered they had shields anyway, so I never mentioned it,
Alexia replied. Lusam sat up straighter as he thought about the possibility of enchanting Alexia's bow for increased firing range. He knew he could enchant the bow easily enough, but he was also considering the arrows. If he could increase the range of both the bow and the arrows, it should be enough to make the agents of Aemon use their shields at all times. If they didn't, and they dropped further back out of range instead, they risked losing sight of Lusam's party altogether, and he doubted very much that they would want to do that.
Alexia, did you see where the agents set up camp tonight before we lost the light?
Lusam asked.
Yes, I always look, just in case they did come close enough for me to take a pot shot at them. Why'd you ask? Tell me. If I enchanted your bow to reach their camp, how many arrows could you get into the air at once?
Lusam asked. Alexia looked back down the hillside, as if judging the distance to where she last saw the agents before the failing light had hidden them from view.
I think 4 or 5, but in the darkness I probably wouldn't hit anything,
she replied, still looking in the direction of the agents' camp.
I'm sure you wouldn't. But if we attack them at first light, we might just kill or wound enough of them to even the odds a little. As soon as they realize what's going on, they'll resume their shields immediately, but maybe we can thin them out a little before that happens. If I enchant both the bow and the arrows, it will vastly increase their range and killing power. If I can increase the range of your weapon enough so that it makes it impossible for the agents to remain out of its range, whilst at the same time maintaining sight of us, they'll have no choice but to use their shields at all times, even while they sleep,
Lusam said.
That might just work, lad. But you can bet they'll likely send an awful lot of missiles our way when they realize their current plan will no longer work. Are you sure you can handle such an onslaught in your condition?
Ren said, sounding a little concerned.
No, I'm not sure I can handle it. But the alternative will mean certain death for all of us if we just continue to wait and play into their hands. At least this way we get to choose when and where we make a stand. Besides, everyone we kill is one less that can fire at us later, and any that are injured would either have to be healed or left behind.
Healing someone takes a lot of energy, so if they did heal any of their wounded, it would also weaken them further. A win-win situation, if you ask me, Lusam replied.
The others remained silent for a few minutes, each obviously playing out the various scenarios in their minds and the lack of alternatives available.
If we can survive the initial retaliation, I think we might have a chance, Ren said, breaking the silence. We need to plan our departure from here carefully, though. Every wasted missile from them is good for us, but any that find their mark will reduce our chances of surviving tomorrow. Lusam, could you erect your magical shield around me, but leave my shield outside your protection?
I don't see why not, but what good will that do? Lusam asked.
I propose a two-stage retreat after we attack tomorrow. As soon as the arrows find their targets, the two girls will run as fast as they can and put as much distance between themselves and the agents as possible. I will face the incoming missiles with my shield, hopefully neutralizing most of them before they even touch your magical shield. If we stand back to back so I can see the incoming missiles, you can guide me backwards along the path as we also retreat. Hopefully the agents will waste a lot of energy before they realize the futility of their attacks, Ren said.
I'm not running away and leaving Lusam alone, Neela said firmly. No, it's okay, Neela. I think Ren's plan might actually work, especially if I expose my aura to them. It would be like waving a red flag to a bull. I'm sure they wouldn't be able to resist a chance to finish me off, and hopefully waste a lot of energy in the process. In fact, if I stayed very close to Ren and projected my aura just in front of him, I doubt they would even be able to tell that Ren was even there. And if they thought it was just me with my magical shield, they would likely throw everything they had at me, Lusam said, grinning at the imagined looks on the agents' faces when they realized their costly mistake.
Yes, you might be right, lad. If you did project your aura in front of me, it should be more than bright enough to blind them to my lesser aura. Like I said, I'm sure they will throw everything they have at us once we attack them, especially after they realize their original plan has failed. It would have been nice to know how exposed we'll be further up this path before we made our move, though. But I guess we can't have everything, Ren said.
Maybe we can, Lusam replied, grinning.
I don't see how. If we move, they'll see us and think we're attempting to escape. All that would achieve is another sleepless night for all of us, Ren said.
Not necessarily. I've been partially hiding my aura since we entered these mountains, so the agents couldn't tell from a distance who I was. I could hide my aura completely, then go alone to scout the path up ahead without being seen easily enough, Lusam said.
It would certainly help knowing what we're likely to come across tomorrow before we commit ourselves totally. But it might be too dangerous for you walking on this narrow path in full darkness, Ren said.
Don't worry about me. Even if I fell over the edge, I would just levitate myself back up again, Lusam said, laughing.
That's not what I meant. I was referring to any nighttime predators out there, like mountain lions or wolves. You can't use your shield because you would be seen leaving. In fact, now that you mention it, if you did fall over the edge and levitate yourself back up again, the agents would see you the instant you used your magic, and likely fire at you with everything they had. You would have to be very careful out there, lad, Ren said.
Chapter 2 Lusam wondered to himself just how likely the threat of an attack by a predator actually was this high up in the mountains. But he realized he didn't have enough experience in this type of environment to make an educated guess.
Lusam, do you mind if I ask you a question about your aura? I've been meaning to ask you this for a long time, but never seemed to get the chance, Neela said, breaking the silence. Of course not. What did you want to know? Lusam replied. You told me that everyone has an aura, and certain people, like you and Ren, can see them in others. I also remember you telling me of your promise to your grandmother to hide your aura at all times. Neela said, trailing off into silence.
Yes, Lusam asked, prompting her to continue.
Well, if you always hide your aura from others, doesn't that make you very conspicuous? What I mean to say is, if you don't have an aura, but everyone else around you does, surely that makes you more of a target and easier to find in a crowd, Neela said.
Yes, you're right, that would make me very conspicuous. My grandmother also realized that potential problem when I was young, and had me adjust my aura so that I appeared no more powerful than a normal person, instead of hiding it completely. The best way I can describe it is like a shutter on a lantern. Normally, I leave a small amount of light visible to others, but hide the full strength of my aura behind a barrier so that nobody can see my full magic potential,
Lusanne replied.
Oh, that explains a lot, then. I was wondering why that agent we first came across in Helvile didn't confront you,
Neela said. Lusanne was about to announce he was ready to go and scout the path up ahead of them when Ren spoke first.
I was also there when you encountered that agent. I was secretly observing him from a window above when I saw you both walking up that cobbled street holding hands. I checked your auras and found you both devoid of any magical abilities, so I continued to observe the agent instead. What you don't know is that when you left the street, he reanimated the corpse that had its throat cut. Then he sent the abomination out into the streets to find and kill you. Of course, at the time I didn't know it was you, but luckily I was able to find it and destroy it before it did any harm.
Thanks. I'm glad you did. He was creepy enough while he was breathing. I'm glad I never had to meet him face to face when he was dead too,
Neela said, shuddering at the thought.
Yeah, thanks, Ren. Meeting him once was enough for me too. But how can anyone reanimate a dead person, though?
Lusanne asked curiously.
It can only be achieved through the use of necromancy, a vile and dark magic known only to the followers of Aemon. Its very existence is an affront to Aisha and all that she represents. It's the main reason why the paladins were created, to fight the evil of Aemon's followers and their undead minions,
Ren replied.
How can you kill something that's already dead?
Alexia asked, with revulsion clearly evident in her voice.
It's almost impossible for a non-blessed weapon to kill an undead minion. Fire, of course, will eventually burn it away to nothing, but regular steel weapons are almost useless against them. If you cut away a hand, it will still grasp at you. Remove a head, and the body will continue to advance on you. They have little intelligence, but they do possess great strength and can easily kill a man. If you're ever unlucky enough to be confronted by such an abomination, my advice would be to run. They may be strong, but they're not fast, and you can easily outrun them. Just remember, they don't ever need to eat or sleep, and they will never give up chasing you until they are destroyed or you are dead,
Ren replied.
Are you guys trying to scare me to death before I go out into the darkness alone or what?
Lusanne said, sounding rather nervous. Ren laughed loudly, startling them all a little.
Don't worry, lad. You're not likely to come across any undead up that path. But if you do, try not to bring them back here with you. I'd like to get some sleep later when you get back so I'm fresh for tomorrow. I can do without fighting any undead tonight,
Ren said, still laughing. The two girls also laughed at his comments, but Lusanne didn't seem to find it quite as amusing for some reason.
Okay, I'll go and leave you guys to have some more fun, Lusanne said sarcastically.
Wait, Ren said. You can't just vanish into thin air. The agents are bound to have a lookout. And if they see your aura vanish, they will know something is amiss. Come and sit behind me, but do it slowly so whoever is watching down there can see you disappear behind my brighter aura. Once you're sitting down, reduce the strength of your aura gradually until it's completely gone before standing up. Also, when you leave camp, don't walk in front of anyone else and block their aura either, or it may give away your position.
Oh, I'd never thought about that,
Lusanne said, moving slowly to Ren's position and sitting down behind him.
I've spent far too much time observing enemy agents from a distance to overlook things like that, lad. I'm sure they will also be trained in such tactics, so let's not give them any more help than we have to,
Ren said. Lusanne grunted his agreement and started to gradually fade out his aura from sight. Once he had completely hidden his aura, he stood up and moved to the back of their camp. He said his goodbyes and quickly left their camp behind, making sure not to walk in front of any of the others as he did so. He then headed up the path to scout out what lay ahead of them for tomorrow's crucial retreat up the mountain. After Lusanne left, nobody spoke or moved for a long time in camp. Ren was busy carefully watching for any signs of movement in the agent's camp below, and even though neither Neela or Alexia could see their camp, they too found themselves staring in that direction. After several minutes, Ren heard movement from behind as one of the girls stood up. A moment later, Alexia appeared at his side and knelt down beside him.
Ren, may I ask something of you, please? Alexia said quietly by his side.
Sure, what is it?
Ren replied, never taking his eyes away from the enemy's camp below.
I've never met a paladin of Aisha before, but would it be appropriate to ask for a blessing from you in preparation for tomorrow's battle?
She asked sheepishly. Ren was surprised by her request and didn't really know how best to respond. He had never been asked for a blessing before by anyone, let alone given one. As a paladin, he was a soldier of Aesha, not a priest who dealt with the spiritual needs of people. He considered her words carefully and what his response should be for a few moments before he replied.
I'm honored you would ask me, but I think the best person to request a blessing from would be Aesha herself. I would be more than happy to join you in prayer in this regard, Ren said.
Thank you, Ren. I would really appreciate that, Alexia replied.
Neela watched as Ren removed his sword and took to one knee in front of it, head bowed in prayer, while Alexia knelt beside him also in prayer. Neela felt strange, mixed emotions. She had never been a religious person, but for some reason right at this moment she felt left out, as if she were missing out on something important. She found herself also praying for their success in the coming days, but still felt a tinge of jealousy that Alexia had prayed alongside a paladin of Aesha for some crazy reason. When Alexia and Ren were finally finished praying, Alexia returned to Neela's side and sat quietly in the darkness.
I didn't know you were the religious type, Alexia, Neela said quietly. Yes, I always have been since I was very young. We had a priest of Aesha join us in the forest when I was a young girl. He came to try and convince our band of thieves to change their ways. Although no one there would have caused him any harm intentionally, at first he was ridiculed for his beliefs and views of the world by many. Not long after he arrived in camp, we were viciously attacked by a roaming patrol and took heavy casualties. He saved many lives that day, and the respect the other members of our band gave him from that day forward helped cement his place among us. He came to understand the injustices we faced on a daily basis, and apparently decided to make our godless band of men and women his personal mission. He started conducting sermons within our camp soon afterwards, but first his congregation was made up of only a few people. As time passed, either through luck, coincidence, or his direct intervention with Aesha, no one knew, but our luck changed for the better. Patrols lessened, injuries and deaths decreased dramatically, and there was a newfound prosperity in our camp. I think the real reason for the change was the fact that the priest had convinced our leaders that they didn't need to kill people in order to rob them. Traders and travellers were no longer killed or harmed as long as they didn't resist too much, and as a result the local authorities simply posted warnings not to travel through our forest. Of course many did, as it saved a lot of travelling time in comparison with travelling by road, but the authorities deemed it their own fault if they were robbed, due to ignoring their advice in the first place, and we were left alone for the most part. The priest became almost talisman-like, and everyone wanted his blessings. His congregation grew rapidly, and I became one of his young followers. He taught me and a few other youngsters many things about life outside the forest, and instructed us all in the ways of Aesha. Many years later, he was killed during one of the many raids sent by the Duke of Okich. He was trying to protect one of our elderly women, and was viciously cut down as he did so. They left him there to bleed out, ignoring his pleas to spare the women and children. I was there when he died. He asked me to promise him that I would not stray from the path of Aesha after he left this world. I freely made him that promise, and from that day on, I put my complete faith in Aesha for all things, and I will continue to do so for as long as I draw breath, Alexia said quietly.
What was the priest's name?
Ren asked from the darkness.
His name was Sigmund, Alexia said quietly.
I know of whom you speak. He was a good man, and it saddens me greatly to learn of his passing in that way. But his mission was, as you guessed, to spread the word of Aesha to any and all non-believers. It seems he achieved his goals. He would have considered even one saved soul worth his life, and from what I just overheard, he certainly achieved that,
Ren said.
Come, let us thank Aesha for our mutual friend and his successful life.
Alexia didn't reply, but gladly accepted Ren's offer and rejoined him in prayer for her old mentor and friend.
If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.